Min campus alihor, miai Karsten Schwine. Nilqakom għal din is-sensiela ġdida li jisima minn kampus għal ieħor. Matul din is-sensiela ser ikun hemm numru ta' mistednin minn madwar id-dinja kollha. L-ispirazzjoni ta' din is-serje ġiet ftit nammetti mill-pandemija għaliex il-kuntatti li bnejt matul is-snin fil-qasam l-iktar tal-politika kulturali tal-immaniġjar fl-istess qasam. Bħali u bħalkom probabbilment jekk mhux anki iktar minni kellkom f'xi mod tadattaw anki tnaqsu forsi minn ċertu safar, tnaqsu minn ċertu komunikazzjoni kuntatt dirett ma' kollegi minn madwar id-dinja, jista' jkun fil-qasam tat-tagħlim, tal-edukazzjoni għolja, tar-riċerka, anki fuq sempliċi vjaġġar fejn jista' jidħol forum ta' networking differenti. U għalhekk flimkien ma' direzzjoni ta' Campus FM, ħsibt li għal dis-sensiela nipprova naqgħod ftit u anke nirrifletti ftit fuq dawn iż-żminijiet. Flimkien ma' kollegi, akademiċi, riċerkaturi, nies f'qosma differenti ta' politika u immaniġjar mhux biss fil-qasam kulturali anke dak edukattiv, imma anke f'qosma oħra li għandhom oqsma oħra għandhom x'jaqsmu ma' drittijiet tal-bniedem, ġustizzja soċjali, attiviżmu. U dawn ħana jgħidilhom hekk kollegi li huma anke ħbieb li ġwut minnhom hemm ħbieb antiki oħrajn iktar reċenti u oħrajn ukoll li sirtu naf biss mid-dinja diġitali. Ħsibt li kolli ftit l-opportunità biex nisma minn għandhom dak li bl-Ingliż ngħidulu l-career path. Dak li matul 10-20 sena hemm min anke iktar. Igwidaħ b'xi mod jekk nistgħu ngħidu hekk mexa f'ċertu passi biex bena din il-karriera, biex għamel ċertu żviluppi. Ħana nsimgħu u ħana naraw fil-immaġinazzjoni tagħna fuq aħna kif rari xi ħadd ikun jaf eżattament fej ħajspiċċa, fej ħajmur, u naħseb messaġġ jekk nista' ngħidlu hekk minn ma nistgħu li hemm xi għan superjuri fis-sens jella x'faħħa mill-aħħar wieħed ukoll ta' intratteniment u mogħdija ta' żmien. Xi ħaġa però li toħroġ fil-rouge kif jgħidu l-Franċiżi huwa li forsi tappella din speċjalment għall-studenti ta' ċertu età illi xejn ma jiġi faċli illi pjan maħdum minn qabel huwa rari. U fl-esperjenza nħan nisimgħu din toħroġ ħafna u ta' spiss. Ewwel program tal-lum se nitkellem ma' Emma Lind li meta kont qed nirrekordja il-programm fl-aħħar tas-sajf 2021 kienet is-Segretarju tal-Istat tad-Dipartiment tal-Kultura tan-Norveġja. Jiġifieri kellha karika politika importanti li kif ħadd tgħidilna hi mhux li fiċċet, mhux li jistess fitxe din kariga politika, però ċirkostanzi li studji tagħha ħajjita ħafna affarijiet waslua għal din kariga. Il-Norveġa però kellhom l-elezzjonijiet fit 13 ta' Settembru u hemmhekk ċertu affarijiet inbidlu. Kif ħa naraw storja partikolari, però fl-istess ħin li diġà tina t-toma ta' xinu ġej fil-bqija tas-sensiela. Bel ma nisimaw l-intervista ma' Malin li nixtieq ngħidu wkoll grazzi lil Gavinia Galia u t-tim tagħha tal-grupp proġett mużikali Medinea għaliex il-mużika li se nkunu nisimgħu ġa smajna fil-fatt fil-bidu matul il-programm u anki fit-tmiem il-programm huwa proprju imnebbaħ u prodott minn dan il-proġett li jiġi flimkien kif qed nisimgħu mużika differenti mill-Mediterran kollu. Dawn il-recording saru frar li kien propju fil-bidu lejliet il-pandemija frar 2020 recording si saru ġewwa Bed Valletta, parti minn program tal-Unjoni Ewropea Erasmus Plus u parteċipanti huma Stavros Niarchos Foundation, il-Konsill Malti għall-Arti, l-Università Malta u l-Orkestra Filarmonika ta' Malta. Kollox ikkoordinat mill-ARC Research and Consultants. So today, with me, I won't say in the studio because we're doing this across north, south, the European continent, is Emma Lynn. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Carsten. Lovely to speak to you.
It's great to have you. You up north in Oslo and myself south in Valletta, in Malta. As our listeners would have heard from the introduction, you've... quite a bit of experience in the field of culture and the arts, which is something which has brought us together, through which we met a few years ago at the University of Warwick when we were reading for a master's in European cultural policy and management. And I guess this series, as with other guests as well, will try to open up little windows to listeners. And as used to happen with me, when I used to listen even at a younger age, this type of programs, especially on radio, trying to connect experiences, both personal and professional, with then career paths and how they developed. Sometimes I'd get inspired and see how things work out in the real world. And in your case, there seem to be many instances of the fields of policy, of culture, of politics as well, coming together. But that's saying that sort of from the benefit of being in the here and now. I guess if you look back, you might see things as a bit of a path leading to where you are now, or maybe not. Maybe it's more constructed, sort of. So I guess I'm curious to know whether, if you look back, do you see some chain of one experience leading to the other, or was it in fact more random?
I think it's a little bit of both. Definitely, there are two sort of themes, and in most of both my sort of education background and choices for further education, and also what I wanted to go into professionally, it has always sort of been both the arts and also politics. It's always been quite both of those two sort of themes have always been quite present in most of my choices and what I've been looking for in both educational opportunities but also professionally. So I think in many ways it's not been always that strategic. There's not always been a grand plan for how one thing is going to lead to the other. But it's definitely been an interest that's been the sort of drive, I suppose, in being aware of what opportunities mm-hmm. are out there mm-hmm. And what and being, you know, for what you're what kind of opportunities you're open to. Yeah. So I started out with performing arts. I'd love to be on stage. I used to do dance.
Okay.
And you know, quite early on, realizing that professional dance probably wasn't on the cards or in the cards for me.
Okay.
Personally, just wasn't. But then, you know, how do I go from there? Is it, I didn't really want to, I think everyone who's done a performing arts degree in such might have that sort of question, well, what can I do if I don't?
Yes. Yes.
If I don't act professionally, if I don't dance professionally, you know, what, you know, was it a waste of time? Was it a, yes. a waste of efforts? And I just quite firmly believe that none of those, if you choose something out of a genuine interest or a passion, I think any kind of learning opportunities or, you know, being in an environment where you're with other peers or with, you know, other professional people who share your interest and share your passion for something, it's never a waste of time. And yeah. I've treasured every single sort of step has had something valuable. I've brought it, I've, you know, taken it with me, and I've, uh-huh. and it's sort of been, you know, very, it's been a reason for why I sort of done the, you know, the next thing that I've, that's presented itself.
It reminds me also of, and I guess the listeners will relate to this as well, how sometimes, even at a young age, maybe because of family, maybe because of friends, we start trying out different things. And then maybe something doesn't work out exactly as we thought it would. So something else comes up or one shifts one's focus. And the shift from maybe being on stage, for example, with the performing arts. But I can think of some friends and colleagues who have gone through the same experience with sports, for example, who then say, okay, I really like this. And I'm good at aspects of it. And I really want a future in this area because I like the people. I like the working environment. But as you said, what else? What other aspects maybe? Behind the scenes and the management side of things and policy. What else is there around that? Sometimes I find friends and colleagues also stop for a break sometimes or keep up what they're doing, but carry it on in an amateur way, in the positive sense of the word, like you love what you do, but you have sort of a day job and then do something else which you love after hours. But in your case, as in the case of other people, you sort of one thing led to the other. And I guess you found a way of combining the day job, so to speak, with the field, with the area of culture, the arts, and we'll be talking also about policy and research as well later on. How important was the environment, though? Because a lot of it is down to you, but a lot of it is also thanks to the environment we work with. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think one of the most sort of standout memories or that I have from particularly studying performing arts was not necessarily wasn't necessarily about acknowledging whether or not I could be a professional artist. It was you know, being around these other artists, these other the teachers, the researchers, people who had mm-hmm. come from different fields, were working in the same sort of area within the performing arts, and sort of understanding that you can come together from different backgrounds, you know, doing different things. Some are meant to be on the stage, whilst there's all these other things happening that all link together and enabling that the arts is there available and mm-hmm. making sure that actually the arts has a place in well, not just on in society, but I just the fact that it was in an academic environment and it was built on the same sort of academic foundations of research and just being genuine, you know, genuinely curious about understanding how art is placed within society, how certain you know, certain ways of working or certain ways of presenting something, how it affects us as people, how mm-hmm. different technology was changing how we, and this was mostly to do with how you create art, not so much about how you consume it, but how art is actually, you know, affected by the, you know, digital tools and how that was changing how you could express yourself, and also who could actually be an artist. It was just being together in that kind of environment where there were no limits in terms of your role, and you could actually explore your role within, you know, the performing arts in a different way. It's not just about being a choreographer or being on stage or even, you know, working in the ticket office. It's so much more that's around it. And I think that's what led me to cultural policy as well, just understanding the sort of politics and the different frameworks, how you, you know, it these things don't happen on their own, you know, understanding how the system is sort of created to make sure that we have these, you know, amazing institutions and these amazing opportunities in our society. So I think it's the environment within the, you know, just experiencing academic dance, I suppose, it was my sort of first proper real understanding that I could do something more with my interest and my passion, and this combining it with my which I've always had an interest in politics and being involved in making, you know, things happen and being involved in decision making and having a voice really of what I thought was important that we we use public funding for, you know, why is art important for us as a society? You know, making sure that's talked about and we have, you know, the right vocabulary and the right sort of instruments to be able to also, you know, create a broader understanding for it than just, you know, artists and cultural workers who already are very passionate about arts and culture.
That's right.
It's about creating that understanding more broadly within society.
Yes, the mix of people and their backgrounds and what they bring to the table of discussion seems to underlie what you're describing. Because on the one hand, there's the structure and the framework of academia and of training and of, let's say, culture and the arts in general. But at the same time, when you start sort of reaching out and branching out to try to make the impact of what you're doing more tangible, then you've got to have a mix of experiences. And it's something I think people who work across different areas, so they're not technicians in one particular area, but they sort of like to look a bit beyond their own area, specific area, to see a little bit what's going on in the bigger picture. And that also means then a diversity of experiences and of skills. So from what you've said till now, and also what I know about you, you haven't sort of shied away from also seeing how other societies operate. So through travel, through networking, through different ways of sort of opening up for collaboration. How important was that sort of comparing different contexts and how they operate, possibly within the north of Europe or even further afield?
Well, I think it's always important to sort of look to others and see how, and you know, to understand see how other countries and other parts of society, I suppose, also solve different problems, how they perceive certain certain parts of the arts and cultural, what role it plays in society. And I thought, you know, the, as you remember as well, the cultural policy course that we did at Warwick was quite an international one. It, at that time, it had more of a European sort of context. Now it's, I think it's even more international, but there was, you know, a lot of various backgrounds and experiences from different nationalities within that course. And that in itself was a very important eye opener to, you know, suddenly, you know, talk about the value of art and the, you know, the value of culture in society with, you know, very different experiences. And just, it's just, well, I've always been curious about how other people perceive things, how they argue things, and to understand, you know, I think one of the most important things that we, you know, we can do, and as researchers, but also working in politics, is about, you know, being curious and, you know, asking questions and talking to other people about what's important and how you know what it means, how we argue, basically the what it means to have arts within, you know, in your own life, does it actually make any difference? And I think you have to be open to other experiences and other ways of seeing things and doing things, and that's how you move forward, and that's how you create you know, new opportunities as well.
Emma, let's stop for a breather there and listen to some music as well.
Ma tul din essenzi la ta' programmi minn kampus għalieħor, il-mistednin se jkunu mitluba jaqsmu magħna anke dak li jispirhom u li joġobhom f'sens ta' mużika. Fil-programm tal-lum, Emma Lind issuġġeriet nibdew b'din l-ewwel track li hija ta' Mona Hawley.
We're back after the first break in this program, and today with Emma Lynn, I'm looking a little bit at steps, sometimes planned, sometimes less planned, but somehow, as is sort of one of the main points of this series, how maybe certain decisions, even influenced by our environment, lead to a certain progression, to a certain path. And Emma, before the break, you described sort of this, if one wants, close relationship between the field of sort of policy making, but also governance, actually implementing policy, and then also the world of politics, which is in a way very related, but also quite different. So I wonder if you could share with me and with the listeners, something about your personal experience and your personal take on having worked for an organization like Arts Council in Norway, and then the shift, sort of, and the changes experienced when you moved into political office.
I don't think I have sort of like a one big sort of memorable experience, but it's definitely, so when I started working at the Arts Council, it was a research and development project. So my background mm-hmm. within research and academia was what basically brought me into the Arts Council. And and it was the project that I worked on there had was about trying to understand the sort of complex value chain or value ecology of the creative economy or the cultural economy, and trying to sort of piece together just how, you know, public investments within the arts and culture, how that trickles through the, you know, the rest of the sector. So that was my role coming into the Arts Council. And I only had about 11 months at the Arts Council working on this R&D project. And it was about sort of collecting both different cultural policy mechanisms, funding that we'd that had been in place, the infrastructure that was there, mm-hmm. trying to understand the sort of commercial side of the arts and culture, how it all sort of fit together. So it was more of a research experience, but I worked quite closely with all the people in the Arts Council who were working with the funding applications and how and trying to understand how the funding application part, the funding, the public funding, was sort of how it spilt into sort of understanding how also the creative industries and the commercial side mm-hmm. Of the arts worked. And I think I've always been lucky in terms of most of my job, you know, the jobs that I've had has been more concerned with understanding, you know, collecting information, presenting questions and presenting sort mm-hmm. of not complete answers about anything, really. It's about sort of presenting, you know, a variety of information and analysis of, you know, what these different funding infrastructures mean, what, mm-hmm. you know, when I've spoken to, you know, to really, it's about understanding, I suppose, most mm-hmm. of all. And it's, that's been a very privileged place to be professionally, I think. And then from moving on from the Arts Council, where I really didn't have to present any kind of straightforward answer in that respect, it was about sort of understanding, going into the art, to the cultural ministry and being part of, you know, a political office and having, you know, having that sort of top position in terms of decision making and mm-hmm. and making policy, creating, you know, a strategy and a platform for where we want the arts and cultural in Norway to sort of what direction we want it to go in, was quite a big adjustment for me, because suddenly I had to really, you know, take a step back and decide, you know, what do I actually think is the right thing to do? What do I really want to happen? And, you know, where do I want to spend public money, basically? Mm-hmm. So it's that responsibility is, well, for me, that was probably the biggest sort of jump in terms of, nice. You know, being able to be in that very sort of privileged situation where you're commenting and you know collecting evidence and gathering sort of mm-hmm. information and observing and understanding, and then suddenly being in that position where you're not just very, very visible. Everybody sees you and wants to know what you're doing and why you're doing it, and it's not in terms of, you know, wanting to be helping you on the way. They want to be, you know, you're also being criticized for, you know, the decisions mm-hmm. that you're mm-hmm. You're making, and that's just yeah. the nature of the office, obviously. Yes. But it's that was probably the biggest sort of experience and change for me in terms of my role in working in policy and then suddenly working in politics. Mm-hmm. So it was, but it's really exciting to be in that sort of role as well, to actually be able to make a difference and to implement changes and to, you know, make decisions that have an impact. And there's also, and things, you know, you're able to do things quite quickly as well, because you're at the top of the ministry. So there was no sort of bureaucracy behind making decisions. You could actually make, you know, you're in charge of the budgets. Yeah. You're in charge of making those strategic decisions. And it's a really privileged and exciting position or office to have.
What were the main tools that you sort of deployed, that you used to adjust to the situation, going from carrying out research with pressure, yes, with job-related pressure, but up to a certain extent? And as you said, maybe privileged because also quite limited in scope, important in and of itself, but very different than in nature from being in the public eye, open to scrutiny and criticism on a political level. Were there maybe any of these tools which you actually sort of picked up along the way for what we said before, your education and your background?
I think the background in research and having that sort of having that story and my sort of background within the arts, I think that gave me a security, I suppose, within, you know, my own sort of position, that I knew that I had knowledge and I had experience that wasn't, you know, the entire field that I suddenly was responsible for. You know, there's definitely parts, you know, large parts within the arts sector and the, you know, what the cultural minister or the ministry is responsible for that I don't have, you know, inside, you know, research knowledge with within. But it definitely gives you a security within, you know, yourself, that I know if there are things that I don't know, I know where to go and ask and who to talk to. And I think that gives you some sort of reassurance that you are, that you're not completely starting from scratch. I think that was probably the biggest sort of security that I had for myself. And I think in terms of becoming a public figure, and I'm also state secretary, I started out as an advisor and then I became state secretary to a minister who and a politician who is very visible in Norwegian politics. He's probably one of the most profiled politicians in Norway. So I think I learnt, you know, by you know, following him and being someone who's very comfortable and someone who's very experienced with being in that kind of, you know, scrutiny, public eye, you know, being that kind of figure, was also very reassuring, knowing that, you know, this is something that he knows how to navigate through, and was very, you know, very generous in sort of sharing about, you know, the knowledge and showing me how basically to handle several things in terms of being in the public eye, which is, it can be quite daunting for those, especially if you haven't really, if it's not been something that was part of your plan. Like I never, my involvement in politics has been at a sort of amateur level all the way. I've done local government. I've done city council in Kristiansand, which is a small town where I come from. And that was basically the extent of my political experience before I was asked to help and be state secretary here at the ministry. So it was never really part of my sort of grand plan. So it was all very, it was a bit of a shock at first. I think that was kind of what I was most scared about, was that public figure and being visible to everyone, and knowing that whatever happens, it stops here. I can't sort of hide away, and I can't you know, say that I don't know, or I don't know how to answer that, or, you know, you can't sort of push it up higher, because it's basically, this is where it all stops. So that took a few weeks to get used to, and then of course we had COVID and the lockdown. So basically, I think all the sort of plans of learning slowly and building up experience, mm-hmm. and having like a strategic plan of how, you know, what we're going to do and when we're in office, that just went out the window. It was basically crisis. You now have to do something that no one's ever done before, and that's make sure that the arts and culture sector in Norway survives this pandemic.
In fact, you mentioned COVID there. It's sort of the subject which tends to come up in so many conversations because it's real. It's still with us, and somehow a year and a half have passed, but we still adapt to the new reality. So I wonder whether, very very briefly before our second pause, you could just share with us sort of where is the Norwegian arts and culture scene now? Sort of, so many months have passed, certain measures have been taken, like all over Europe and all over the world, or not. Certain societies have been sort of lucky, privileged, prepared enough to adapt. But very briefly, where would you say you are now?
Well, Norway still has some of the strictest restrictions in terms of crowds, mobility, definitely in terms of travel. So we don't really have a lot of foreign travelers come into the country. So it's still very much a desperate situation, I think, for the arts and culture. I think within, this will be the same in any country. It's the live market, so where people consume and experience arts and culture live together with other people. That's the side of arts and culture that's really taken the worst toll. It's where, you know, it still is a very little activity compared to a normal year, and it's and we're still very much there. We're still consuming a lot of art and culture. Mm-hmm. We're downloading music, we're watching films. There's a lot of digital consume of art. So I think in general, people, and certainly in Norway, it's, you know, that's the one thing that we're all really, if you ask someone what they're looking forward to when we can lift all restrictions, it's a, you know, most people would say, I'm really looking forward to going to that concert or a festival, or visit a museum or something. It's definitely arts and culture, and eating and being together, obviously, is what people have really, really missed within the pandemic. But we're still definitely having to help in terms of, you know, financial aids and making sure that we have a, even if we can't save all small arts organizations or art and cultural workers, we definitely want to make sure that we have the whole sort of value chain is intact, that we haven't lost, you know, all technicians, or we've lost artists on the way. It's about sort of making sure that once we can lift all these restrictions, that we can in fact get back to activity, you know, start the economy as quickly as possible, really, for the arts and culture. So we're definitely still dealing with restrictions and the consequences of those. But I think we're hopeful. We seem to have not lost that many on the way so far. So fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Okay. Let's pause for the last time, and again, listen to a bit of music.
Attini pawza mużikali fil-programm minn Campus għal-ieħor illum ma' Malend. Se nisimgħu għażla oħra tagħha wkoll minn artist Norveġiż ta' rapper Hakim.
I had a boot scopper, you know, miss on you. Ay, 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 ay. Ay, 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 ay. Ay, 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 ay. I had a boot scopper, you know, miss on you. Ay, 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 ay.
Jeg skal vise mine enemies mens de på fest og drikker Hennessy. Har bare day one, singer frenemies. Jobber 24-7, du vet at vi påler. Lager musikk til som vi spiller når vi står.
So we come back to the last part of today's conversation. Emma Lind is with me. And Emma, to round off, I'd like to ask something which we'll try to combine two things we've been talking about during this program and also before while preparing for it. One is something I ask guests at this stage, which is where are your interests in research and policy, also in your case in the political world, leading you to? I know it's a hard question, a bit of a crystal ball gazing, but maybe even in relation to what's happening around you, and maybe even imagining a post-COVID scenario, which we really all hope for. But maybe I'd like to link that a little bit to something I'm aware of and I've discussed a little bit with you, which is sort of, at least my impression is, in the visual arts, in film, in digital media, which, as you said, is on the rise in terms of production and also consumption because of COVID. There seems to be this growing awareness and growing maybe even demand for a reflection on the recent history of Norway, episodes related to the 1930s, the 1940s, but even more recent episodes. I wonder whether there is some form of maybe connection between where you, the sector, is going, and somehow, ironically, this looking back at what Norway was and what Norway is becoming.
That's a very hard question to respond to, but I'll try and start. I think, in terms of COVID and the COVID situation, I think we're still very much in the sort of in limbo at the moment in terms of what the consequences, long-term consequences, are going to be. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we've seen, but I think this was on its sort of, it was still, you know, developing before COVID-19. It was, you know, the consequences of, you know, the digital transformation that we're seeing. And mm-hmm. How Norway certainly is a very digital country. We're all, you know, even our grandparents and the, mm-hmm. and to the youngest children all have their own telephones and tablets, and mm-hmm. we're all very much online. There's a very online presence in the Norwegian sort of population, and I think that has brought about it a sort of conversation about how do we secure freedom of speech and democratic participation in the public debate. We've seen a lot of hatred develop. There's a lot of sort of polarized debates and climate and political climates, not necessarily driven, you know, from political parties, but, you know, their supporters or other organizations behind them. So it's there seems to be a at the moment, at least, there is a definite conversation and debate in the Norwegian public about how do we secure freedom of speech, mm-hmm. but at the same time make sure that you know, everyone feels safe and have the same opportunities to participate in the public debate. So with all the social media, all the platforms that we have, it's a positive thing in many ways, because, you know, never before has so many been able to articulate their opinion and to participate in public debates. But at the same time, we've seen, you know, there's polarization. There's a lot of hatred that develops and is also targeted at certain individuals who are different or who have a different opinion even. Yeah. And that has a consequence in terms of particularly young people's wish to participate in politics and also to just even, you know, dare to to say that they don't have the mainstream, you know, they don't follow mainstream opinion.
Right.
So, and I think what's scary about it is that it's not just, it's not far right or far left. It's, you know, even if you have a, now it's, if you don't have the mainstream opinion of something, then that's controversial and that need, you know, you then become the target of a lot of, a lot of hatred basically on, of you as a person. So I think, that has, made us look at ourselves as a society. How, you know, how, tolerant are we really? We talk about Norway being a very diverse and open society, and that's what we want. And I think in many times we are definitely, you know, in that direction, but we have our issues like everyone else. And there are maybe certain times that we're not as willing to acknowledge that we've had,
right.
You know, we have our, extreme views as well. You know, we have our problems, with all kinds of, freedom of speech and democracy issues like other governments, no, sorry, other societies and other countries have. So I think for me, I think this discussion around freedom of speech and the position of art, you know, being artistically free enough to, you know, to both dare and also be able to create art in the way that you want to and the story that you want to tell. We've seen that seems to be not necessarily, you know, under pressure, but I see that is a discussion that's blurring. It's sort of coming back to life again in terms of, do we want to spend public money on any kind of art? You know, who gets to decide what is valuable and what should we spend public art, public money on? And you know, artists are feeling, some artists are in that situation that they feel they have to defend, you know, themselves. Even if, you know, it's the Arts Council who's provided them with the funding, the artists themselves find themselves, you know, alone quite often in having to defend who they are and their art that they that they stand for. And they've always had to do that, but I think when it becomes digital and it's online the way that it is, it becomes very intense. And also quite isolating. I think that's it's an interesting interesting problem. It's a very important issue to address. And I think if I was going to choose something to want to work with, or you know, my sort of next step that I would like to work more, if it's professional or as a politician, it definitely would be, you know, the digital platforms and how freedom of expression is developed and what kind of laws and you know, how do you, what expressions should be allowed and what shouldn't be allowed? You know, how do we understand the laws that we have today and are they current in terms of the tools and the platforms that we have today, which they obviously are not. There's a big piece of work that needs to be done there.
It's interesting because you said sort of, in a way, you didn't say the word cycle, but you made me think of cycles, policy cycles, and societies that sort of develop, but not in just in a linear way. But somehow we tend to go back a little bit and maybe experience certain challenges, certain crises in different ways. So maybe what artists in many countries around the world experience today is different to the financial and economic crisis of more than 10 years ago. But in the same, in some way, it does remind me and literature and discussions about it sometimes draw parallels behind them, among them. As I suggested before, from my outer perception, possibly when society, and I'm talking about maybe films and audiovisual productions, including in the digital world, look back at, say,
episodes related to the Second World War in Norway, and we're talking about more than one that over the past few years seem to have belatedly caught up, but also started opening up and examining certain challenges that Norway has been through. Not the only country that has gone through them, but somehow at this point in time, over the past few years, something has sort of turned the attention to the creative attention of artists, filmmakers, scriptwriters, and even their audiences to particular episodes in Norway. So more than a question, it was just a comment I wanted to make of my, again, very lay person's perspective on Norwegian politics, but something which maybe from the outside pops up in the news once in a while. And the rest of the time, sort of, maybe it's a good thing, it remains pretty below the radar. But we're at the very end of the program, Emma. So I know, sort of, in a way, you did answer my question of where do you see yourself in the larger context go. But I think I'll ask you quite not a stupid question, I hope, and not one to be taken for granted, maybe a banal one, which is if, and you do work with people younger than yourself, people coming through the ranks of academia, research, and also many of our audience of a certain age that sort of tune in to such programs because they can be inspirational. I don't want to say sort of what would be your message, because it sounds a bit like a Miss Universe sort of thing. How would you want the world to change? But I don't know, like a takeaway point, which you would be sort of able to share in terms of research policy and the arts.
Well, that's very hard to describe in just a few sort of sentences. But I think what I've said to previous students in terms of how to, but what's given me sort of both the energy and mm-hmm. And sort of the energy and the curiosity to continue is to sort of be true, and it sounds very banal, but it is if mm-hmm. you. I've always maintained that I don't always think that exactly what you study or what you study at university is always that, you know, it's not, it doesn't define you. And I think most of all, the most important thing that you can take away from a university experience and a degree is learning how to sort of act on your own interest, act on curiosity, find that glow, find what actually drives you. Why are you, so that when you go to sort of the next step of either research or professional career, it's not about going through the motion and handing in that piece of paper or, you know, getting those credits, sources. It's the process that drives you, and it's about trying to, you know, fill your you know, everyday life with something that actually makes a difference and means something to you. So for me, that's what I've always said, find something that drives you, and then I think the rest will come. Obviously be open to opportunities that might come along. I never planned to be state secretary in the ministry. So, and if I planned for it, I'm sure I wouldn't have, that opportunity wouldn't have come. I think it's more about learning by doing and being open and finding that spark that, you know, that interests you. And, you know, why should you spend 10, 12 hours a day on something? And it shouldn't be about, you know, going through the motion or pleasing someone else. It has to be about something that actually gives you meaning, so that you look back and you don't regret what you've spent loads of time on.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you very much, Emma, for that. That was very, very interesting. Thank you.
Il-tama li dik l-intervista ma' Emma Lind. Uġbitkom, Emma Lind.
fil-moment li rekordjajna l-programm, fl-aħħar tas-sajf 2020 kienet segretar tal-Istat għall-Kultura ta' Norveġa u nistedinkom tinaqdu miegħi Karsten Xwieraq għal programmi oħra fis-sensjela l-ġdida minn Campus għall-ieħor. Insemmilkom. We'll be right back.